Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Our guest is William H. Calvin, who is telling us how global warming can bring an ice age.
May I back up a little bit? There are a lot of people who don't, who really don't buy this global warming. Mm-hmm. Many of them happen to be political leaders, and I think part of that really is denial because life is much easier. But there are still a lot of people, knowledgeable people, well-informed people, who think that global warming is just the disaster du jour, and you know, if we ignore it long enough, it'll go away.
Or that it's just fine and we can take advantage of it.
Well, or that it'll solve the iceberg problem.
Right.
No. It's the abrupt climate change stuff that I'm talking about, the prospect of abrupt cooling, is simply the most disastrous yet of the possible consequences of global warming. It's also something that might happen even without global warming, I should say. The usual arguments about global warming have to do with whether it has happened in the past, which I think is sort of a false issue, and the predictions for how much will occur in the future. If we keep increasing the carbon dioxide the way we're doing, it by itself will cause about a 2-degree warming of the atmosphere. And the increased evaporation that you get from all this will cause another 2, 3, 4 degree warming. There will be some other effects, like the amount of clouds and the amount of ice to reflect, you know, sunlight back into space, that will change this. So the estimates for how much warming there will be in the next century for a doubling of CO2 range from about 2 to 4 degrees Celsius, or double that for Fahrenheit. That's a warming that is far greater than any that we have seen in the past, and all occurring within about a century. So it's pretty speedy by itself, and you would expect a lot of reaction to it. So, I mean, I'm worried about global warming all by itself, just because of how impressed I am with the good predictions that the climate models make.
Well, and part of, I think, the challenge is that this is looking ahead. Prediction, which is always risky, it is science that the average person doesn't understand. It's complex, and it's hard to make a specific prediction that, you know, on January 1st, the year 2000, the temperature will have gone up 1.7 degrees centigrade. Mm-hmm. And again, a lot of people are very skeptical of the science because it is not, it's not Newtonian science.
Well, it actually is Newtonian science. it's hard to trace out a train of consequences like that for many people. The climate models that we now have, our ability to sort of make working models, as it were, of the long-term parts of the weather. I mean, all of this is straight Newtonian physics. It's just that it's being carried out with a degree of precision in these computer models that most people don't have the ability to sort of comprehend how sophisticated, you know, those models are. There's plenty of uncertainties in it, but they're uncertainties of magnitude, not uncertainties as whether it will happen or not. I think it's very important to get across that while we could be off by a factor of a few degrees in it, that the fact that there will be at least a few degrees warming will happen, I think, is very good. You can have possibilities of where something else might come along, like a volcano or something that might cool things down temporarily, but they would only save us for a few years. I mean, this is the prospects of having some substantial, you know, change in temperature and all the consequences to the plants and animals and agriculture, you know, from it. You know, that's pretty sure. The point that this can trigger an abrupt cooling is also pretty sure, but we don't know where the trip point is. Okay, we don't know enough yet about the North Atlantic Current's decade-to-decade fluctuations in this downwelling of the current to really know how much safety there is in it. But the fact that warming can cause it is now pretty safe bet. Okay.
Well, and what I'm hearing you say, and I want to, you know, just round this off, because there are still scientists, many of whom work for the petroleum industry, energy industry. There are still scientists that will stand up and say, we don't know yet. It is still a theory.
Well, if you remember the tobacco industry, worked very hard at exactly the same thing.
I think I catch your point.
With great success for 33 years. It's not proven yet. Right. Okay? Well, yeah.
Well, and I guess this goes to the sense of proof. I mean, until it's happened, you really can't prove it in that sense.
Unfortunately, this is one of those things that you do not wait until you have a house fire before you go to organize a volunteer fire department. And you don't wait until then to investigate the flammability of your building materials. Something like this abrupt cooling, once it got started, would be very hard to reverse. It wouldn't be much time, but we wouldn't be able to organize in time.
And part of your message, presumably, is that this would be a very good time to start developing the fireproof materials and the volunteer fire department.
It would be a very good time to understand the nature of the flammability, as it were. I mean, most of this is a plea for more good science, but it's also a plea to, in the computer models, to investigate interventions of what we could do to intervene. I mean, for example, if it's the rainfall on these chimney-like areas that is the critical thing, there are ways of preventing rainfall. I mean, it's called seeding clouds elsewhere and creating a rain shadow. The same kind of rain shadow you get from a mountain range can be created that might keep these downwelling sites from failing the way they would otherwise. So, I mean, there's some simple things that even on the basis of present-day technology that you can imagine.
And you have some other of those relatively simple things in addition to seeding clouds. What are some of those?
Well, again, it depends on where the water is coming from. If it's coming from rainfall, then something like cloud seeding would be a very important part of it. If it's coming as melt-off from Greenland, because you warm up things and Greenland starts melting, one of the big dangers there is not just the steady leakage of the water, but it can come out in great floods. These big, long fjords make great reservoirs if you block them with an ice dam, and glacier surging, block fjords with some regularity. And once they've built up enough water behind them, they always overflow the dam, and it breaks suddenly. And in a day, you have this runoff coming out that would ordinarily have trickled out over 1 or 2 years' time. And so those great floods of meltwater can cause a lot of trouble.
One of the things that you have said that just very much impresses me is that we mustn't try to do these things fast. That when you're dealing with big, complicated systems, that one would do well to do it in a considered manner than trying to just jump in and fix everything at once.
Sure. This is something where we don't know yet what will work. What we do know is some of the physics of how the current mechanism works, some of the problems with stabilizing it we can imagine from other nonlinear systems pretty well. And it certainly looks to me like it's within the range of something that we can solve. This is not something that one need be fatalistic about, like perhaps a lot of other things in life, such as El Nino.
Keep coming up, doesn't it?
I mean, this is something that, even though it's a much bigger climate change, nonetheless has this restricted set of mechanisms that really look like we might be able to approach them. I mean, certainly it's obvious how to go about studying them. I mean, you put a lot more oceanographic research ships out there, and a lot more buoys, and a lot more satellites to monitor the process as it operates. And you try in your computer models to try out these intervention schemes that I just roughly sketch out for the sake of showing that it's not all that hard, potentially, to do something. But I think that after we study for 10 or 20 years the intervention schemes by computer, we'll probably wind up inventing something that's, in fact, far more efficient and safer, than the kinds of rough notions like cloud seeding that I use as examples.
If we do it. We're going to be back in just a moment with William H. Calvin, who is a neurophysiologist, a studier of the brain and other large systems as well as small ones, complicated things. We're talking about weather, and when we come back, I want to start with when everybody's in charge, Dr. Calvin, nobody's in charge. So when we come back with Dr. William Calvin and Bill Russell and our guests at the Commerce Club, we will pick up again. Please stay with us.